नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading this morning text 4 and 5 in the 10th canto Chapter 28, Krishna Rescues Nanda Maharaj. Translation, Sri Varuna said, Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O Personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Varuna ecstatically exclaims here that since he has now seen the infinitely gorgeous body of Lord Krishna, the trouble of assuming a material body has now been supremely justified. Indeed, the artha, the goal, or real value of Varuna's life has now been achieved. Because Lord Krishna's form is transcendental. Those who accept his lotus feet go beyond the boundary of material existence. And thus, only the spiritually unaware would presume that the Lord's lotus feet are material. I'm going to read the next verse because it immediately connects with the same message of text 5. Namastubhyam bhagavate brahmane paramatmane nayatra sruyate maya loka shrishti vikalpana. My obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supersoul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. The word shruyate is significant here. Shruti, or Vedic literature, consists of authorized statements made by the Lord himself or his enlightened representatives. Thus, neither the Lord nor recognized spiritual authorities would ever say that within the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, there is the fault of illusion. Srila Sridhara Swami points out that the word brahmane here indicates the Lord is full in himself and that the term paramatmane indicates he is the controller of the living entities. Thus, within the Supreme Being, complete in himself and omnipotent, we do not find any jurisdiction of the material illusory energy. So that it's not going to work. Children are very cute, nice in some other atmosphere than in a Bhagavatam class, like out in the nice fresh air. Okay. Text 4 is also to be, I'll just read 4, 5, and 6, the verses. Text 4 has no purport. Seeing that the Lord Rishikesh had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Sri Varuna said, Now my body has fulfilled its function, indeed. Now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O Personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. My obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom There is no trace of illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this material world. I don't get it. You know, people bring children to Bhagavatam classes. I don't get it. I guess that's part of it. Goes along with the ashram, sannyasa. The scene is a very wonderful scene. The previous verses described Nanda Maharaj observing breaking of the fast on the Dvadasi day. There's details that are presented where it was a unique Dvadasi day because the Ekadasi day had the duration of 18 hours, and there was another 6 hours where the fasting was to be observed, but it had been completed already. And so it was still at sunrise, and it was one of these, like, technically touchy, you know, what do you do with this or do you do with that kind of situations. Nanda Maharaj hadn't broken the fast, but he was bathing before the breaking of the fast, technically after the time that the Ekadasi day had finished, because it was only of 18 hours, but it was still within the proper period for the Dvadasi observance, breaking of the fast. So he was with some other elders in the community, and he had gone to the river Jamuna and was taking his bath, and suddenly Nanda Maharaj just disappeared. People do drown in the Jamuna. It happens. He just disappeared. And so, what did the cowherd men do? Krishna! Rama! Because he's their shelter. He's a little boy, but you know, he's their shelter. And immediately he came. And immediately he knew. And immediately he went to the abode of Varuna. And in that abode of Varuna, as soon as he came before Varuna, Varuna knew who he was. Varuna was jubilant. And although Nanda Maharaj had been apprehended, not exactly kidnapped, but arrested, you violated in the waters of Varuna, you're to be punished. So Nanda Maharaj, when Varuna saw Krishna, he arranged for Nanda Maharaj to be seated on a jeweled, opulent throne. So here's the father, Nanda Maharaj, who's in Vraja Bhav. And here's Varuna, who's in a different one. He's seeing Krishna as he's saying here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmane Paramatmane. You're in supremely pure, uncontaminated existence. Unlike mind, contaminated by contact with matter, you have no contact with matter. And all those who do have contact with matter, all the living entities, they're under your direction, they're under your control. And just by seeing your lotus feet, I'm brought to that place, that same jurisdiction. My home has been sanctified because your lotus feet, his home is underwater, but my home has been sanctified by your presence. My existence is sanctified by your presence. That the goal of life that which is to be achieved by the human form of life has now been achieved just by your coming. So, a few points to elaborate. Specifically, one is the word artha, mentioned in this verse, text 5. Adya me nibrito deha. Adya eva artha. Adyaivarto. So, artha. Vrun is not just showing off his erudition. He's stating his personal purpose of life. He's a demigod. And demigods are devotees. There's a mix of material desire, joy, control, some of that. But they're devotees. And they're devotees of the personality of Godhead. And achieving devotion to the personality of Godhead is the goal, which is different than the common usage of the term artha, as in dharma, artha, kama, moksha. A literal definition, simple literal definition of artha is that which is desired or that which is to be obtained. So commonly artha is, or conventionally artha is translated as economic development or wealth. Dharma, look this way, because dharma is codes of religion to be observed for economic improvement, for sense gratification, and after living one's life piously like that, then sometime later, when you get old and feeble, you've done all your worldly thing, now you strive for moksha. All of this is just like preparation for that. Maybe. But at least dharma, artha, kama. And if one becomes very elevated, then moksha. But way back here, this artha is material prosperity. You know, like what every government tries to do, what every household tries to do, what every aspiring, budding, young enjoyer tries to do, build their little empire, their economic situation, their security, stability, well-being, so they can have the facility for sense gratification. I've done this in a few public lectures where I didn't know the audience. I'll go into a detail once. Brunch Bihari will appreciate this. At one point in time, Kanavakanana Swami was, I guess, president or some leadership role in Vrindavan. And he had previously been in Mayapur working on the construction of the samadhi. And one of the persons who was on his construction team was Pancharatna, the temple, now temple president in Jaipur. So it was, he went with him from Mayapur to Vrindavan with Kandambakananda Swami. Kandambakananda Swami said, why don't you try setting up a temple in Jaipur? This is like way back. So I was attending the VIHE in Vrindavan, and Kandambakananda Swami said, can you go visit Jaipur and give some association to the devotees there? So I said, sure, some service. And one of the things that they arranged was a program at the University of Jaipur. And I hadn't been to that university, hadn't been to Jaipur before. So in the assembly, it was a very large hall, kind of like, you know, those 6-foot thick walls and big, like, very sterile room, institutional feeling to the max, and like long rectangular space, and I'm at one end, and the place was packed with people. And why, you know, I didn't know anybody there. So I just got inspired to begin to get to know the audience a little bit to ask a question. So the question I asked was, I'm going to make a statement, and let me finish the statement, and when I finish the statement, please raise your hand if you agree that this is the correct statement. The statement is, the purpose of the Vedas is to live your life in a religious way, in a moral, ethical, theistic way, in this life, so that in the course of living your life that way, you increase your piety, your punya, so that you can enjoy nicely, in the mode of goodness, in this life, and after this life attain the heavenly destination. How many would agree that's the purpose of the Vedas? Everybody raised their hand. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody. Wow, that was okay. Is there anybody here that might say something different? And in the back, ladies had to be in the back, one young woman raised her hand. One woman raised her hand. I thought, wow, she's brave. And I said, okay, what's your idea? She said, the goal of life is to understand Krishna, and by understanding Krishna by the means of devotional service, we can purify ourselves from the material contamination of all this desire to try to be the joy in the material world and go back to Godhead and serve Krishna eternally. And I said, you must be reading Prabhupada's books. And she said, yes, I'm reading Prabhupada's books. Very good. But everybody else had this other idea. And it's not, you know, just in Jaipur. It's not just in India. It's in the world. The purpose of being religious is boom, boom. And, you know, whatever that salvation or moksha or whatever the terminology is, something. You know, that's for persons that, like, get exhausted from the trying to enjoy program and they want to go and, like, get out of here. Moksha. Just negation. Not take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that artha term way over here is that which is desired. So the materialists, that's what they desire. And so religion is seen as an instrument to get what you desire. That's karma kanda. Now, Varuna is disclosing that he's not on that platform. His desired goal or artha is shelter at the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. Just because it connects with the discussion on Friday evening, we were discussing Yat Kroshi, Yat Asnasi, Yat Jahosi Dadasi, Yat Yat Tapas Yasi Konti, Yat Tat Kurasho Madarpanam. To achieve the fruit of offering everything to Krishna is the one achieves transcendence. Our acharyas describe that there's the transcendence of impersonal and there's the transcendence of personal. And that transcendence of personal is being described here by Varuna as beyond contact with matter. That's in the second. The first verse is the goal of my life, artha, has been achieved just by contacting you, by your coming here, you gifted to me that fruit, the goal of life. There's the purpose of having this human existence is God realization and direct association and service to the Supreme Personality of God, and you've given me that. How I'm ever grateful. You're so merciful. Those who accept your lotus feet, O Personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. That's this last line on the board here. Avapu param advanaha. Avapu, having achieved Param, the state of transcendence, Advanaha, the path of the path of material existence. So, Vana, the forest, the near Vana is beyond, out of the forest of material existence. So the path that can take one out of material existence is your lotus feet. And you brought your lotus feet here. You came. If the lotus feet of the Lord means the Lord comes. And in those lotus feet or in your presence, there's not the touch of matter. So this is a second part that I want to spend a little bit of time with. It's one of these mysterious things that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's beyond duality, because duality commonly in spiritual circles means this place, you know, where there's opposites. There's happiness and distress and pleasure and pain and light and dark and wet and dry and duality. In the Eastern conception, the Oriental conception, yin and yang, the opposite of two things. And that's what this world is. Wherever there's this, there's that. Whether there's that, there's this. It's just the nature of the place. It's a place of duality. And so, by inference, that place, which is the place of no duality, doesn't have the features here. If there's form here, by inference, there's no form. If there's personality here, there's no personality. If there's qualities here, there's no qualities. If there's whatever there is here, it's absent there. But that's the same mistake of, you know, dualities, with and without. It's the very procedure is misleading. But that's the procedure. And people think like that. I mean, not just people that read Mayavad philosophy and Shankaracharya's Shadirak Bhasya. It's just the mistaken step of inference. And born, as Prabhupada describes in Bhagavad Gita, born of frustration. Vita raga bhaya krodha. Being so frustrated, angry, frustrated with the unhappiness, the frustration, the struggle, the turmoil, the bad stuff of this material world. Let me out of here. That's the moksha program. And wanting that, it's the image of transcendence is painted the opposite of what this is. Without, so the neti-neti process, not a ti. What is transcendence? Well, it's not the floor, and it's not the tree, because that's temporary. It's not. What is it? It's not this. So what is it? It's not this. Well, what is it? It's not this. Brahman. So, Varuna is saying, you are that Brahman, Brahmane. You're without the contamination of material duality. There is no touch of material duality within you. And Paramatmane, you are the controller of those who are under the influence of duality. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. He does so through the agency of his external energy. Also, although he's under the director of the external energy, he's not touched by it. So, when people go back to this idea of negation, definition by negation, when people see impersonalist inclined or speculatively inclined persons see or hear descriptions of the personality of Godhead, it grates. you know, how's that? How can you have a form? I mean, it's not just, you know, staunch Mayavadis. It's nice people. Like, you know, lots of experience in book distribution and distributing Krishna books and see the nice picture on the cover of the Krishna book and they say, Who's that? Say, that's God. They go, no. And like push the book away. Because he can't look like that. They say that. He can't look like that. I said, well, why he can't look like that? Well, he can't look like that. That's why he can't look like that. So what does he look like? Well, I don't know, but he can't look like that. And then, you know, the image of, even where there's a monotheistic conception that God is a person, how do they depict God? Look at the Christian tracts sometimes and see how they illustrate God. I've seen two common ones. One is, looks like Abraham Lincoln and the Lincoln Memorial, this like big, tall chair and, you know, a powerful, you better behave or I'm going to smack you, image of God, vengeful, wrathful God. In a, you know, kind of a faint, you know, you can't really quite tell what his face looks like. Or another one is, in the cloud, there's this kind of similarly, you know, not so clear, long bearded fellow. That's God. You know, because he's old. He's the oldest, so he looks really old. But not really distinct clear features. So that's God, but, you know, Krishna's not. Why can't? Well, he just can't. Can't look like that. Can't look like that. That's not God. Varuna doesn't have that problem. Even though he's one who is under the influence of that prakriti, he knows what the goal is. Artha. It's the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the contamination of touch of matter, and all those who are under the touch of matter and contaminated by it, he is controlling them. But he's not controlled by that very means that he controls them. In fact, there's no touch of Maya in him, which is a mystery. It's if you ponder on it a little bit, it's a big mystery. It's a, the mystery goes like this, and it's expressed in many different ways downstream. But the essence of it is: how does something material like this place come from something that's all spiritual, where there's no touch of contamination of matter in that supreme, and from that supreme comes this? How does something material come from something spiritual? And there's so many variations on the theme of that. Like, you know, the one of the classic ones, if God is all good and God is all perfect, then why does he create a place where there's so much suffering? Same essence of the, you know, the doubt. You know, people don't raise it unless their suffering or someone dear to them is suffering, and otherwise it's like they're sailing on, trying to be enjoyers of God's kingdom. But when there's some, you know, acute suffering condition, it's like finger pointing. Hey, if he's all good and all great, how come there's so much suffering? Or a concerned person, there's a calamity. You know, there's calamities in this world. There's been a few recent ones, and they're continuing. Why? Maybe, you know, it brings a doubt in the existence of God or his all goodness, or, you know, different kinds of doubts. But theologically, aside from like the calamity situation, how is it possible? I've been reading the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, and there's a Maitreya asks that question. Excuse me, Vidura asked that question of Maitreya very explicitly, because he's asked about the process of creation. He describes it and says, "Whoa, wait a minute." And he goes into it deeply, not just like how did it happen, but even more specifically, that the living entity is seated in his heart is the Supreme Lord, who is supremely pure. So how does that living entity become bewildered when he's in contact with the Supreme Lord, who's supremely pure? How does this illusion thing happen? Please explain. So it's a classic question. And there's, you know, different theologies in part are divided by how they answer that question. You know, personalists have a simple answer. It's just call it a bad name. It doesn't exist. It's false. Brahman Satya Jagannitya. That's how it just doesn't exist. Just a wave of the hand. It doesn't exist. It's false. And all you have to do is like just say that you're Narayan and you're okay. Om Namo Narayan. You're Narayan. Just renounce the world that's false and you're God. Business finished. But, you know, don't indulge in things of this world. So then that gives a problem. Like, what do you do when you have to eat? Like, they have this, they have this notion that says you cannot make advancement in the household ashram. You have to renounce the world. If you want to make spiritual advancement, you have to renounce the world. If you don't renounce the world, you're not going to make spiritual advancement, because you have to realize you're Brahman. And how can you realize if you're Brahman if you're involving yourself in the material world? Okay, what about, that's the mating thing, what about eating thing? They have to eat. They have a program for that one. It's 9:28 Bhagavad Gita. Brahmarpanam Brahmavir Brahma Dao Brahma Dao Bhutam. In the act of sacrifice, everything enters into transcendence. So we just like realize that everything is Brahman, and then make that sacrifice of renouncing it, and then this you're entering transcendence. Your eating act of eating is an act of transcendence. That's what they do. Where'd you go? Varuna is not making that mistake. He's recognizing that he's in the material atmosphere. He's a devotee, trying to be a devotee, and his goal is to please the Supreme Personality of God. And he has some controlling Ishwara Bhav tendency. So he's a, you know, demigod. He has people serving him and so on. But his goal is the Personality of God. And so there's the distinction between the internal potency and the external potency. And in the Supreme Lord, there's no influence of the external potency. And it's a mystery. The ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents that mystery, the most confidential knowledge. And for most people, it remains a mystery. You read it again and read it again and read it again and read it again. And it's just very mysterious. Let me read the verses. There's just three of them. Starting with text 4, ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. By me, in my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. I call this Upanishadic double talk. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I'm the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. Like, what did he just do here? So you have to read the purports very carefully, and then read them again, then read them again, and read them again, and chant really good rounds, and read them again, and read the commentaries, and read them again, and it starts to become a little bit clear, and then it starts to get cloudy again. It's not easy. It's a chincha beta beta tattva. And it's a chincha, so you can't get your mind around it because it's a chincha. It has to be received in this descending way, not to understand Krishna. It's by devotion alone, not by scholarship. But essentially, everything rests. He gives them, the next verse, he gives the metaphor to, like, a clue to help understand. And that next verse is, as the mighty wind, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all beings rest in me. So if the mighty wind is blowing in the sky, as the wind is blowing, and there's the sky, what happens to the sky? Nothing, because the sky is more subtle and the wind is. So the wind is resting in the sky. And similarly, all beings are resting in Krishna. So stuff is going on. The material energy is moving under his direction, but he doesn't touch it. And he's the source of it. He's more subtle, or the pratishtha, the basis and support of all that energy. And the energy is not, as Varuna is saying in text number 6, which isn't on the board, but he's stating it, there's no touch of that within him. There's no touch of Maya. And so just by being in contact with Krishna, Varuna is saying, the goal of my life is achieved. You've taken me beyond the boundaries of material existence just by your coming here. Sridhar Swami points out that the word Brahmane, this is repeating the purport that I read, Brahmane here indicates the Lord is full in himself, and that the term Paramatmane indicates that he's the controller of all living entities. Thus, within the Supreme Being, complete within himself and omnipotent, we do not find any jurisdiction of the material illusory energy. He's not under the jurisdiction of Maya. Maya is under his jurisdiction. And to be in contact with him takes one beyond material jurisdiction. You come in contact with the Supreme Pure, you become pure. Well, we can whine and complain all we like about how it's tough and difficult and I'm contaminated. I'm insufficient in so many ways. All of that may be very true, but Krishna doesn't have that problem. If we just can connect ourselves with Krishna through bhakti, bhakti yoga, linking with the Supreme, we're taken to that same position. Not like we did it, yay, we're victorious. But Krishna takes us. He has the capacity and the power. And within his existence, there's no jurisdiction of Maya. So that's the solution. And Varuna is stating it. You've made my life complete. Now, the coming attractions include Nanda Maharaj is watching this whole exchange. And he's in Vrajabhav. Like, what's going on here? My son is being worshipped by the worshipable demigod, Varuna. Literally, worshipping him. Not just praising him, he worshipped him. And Nanda Maharaj is on the throne because he's the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Nanda Maharaj goes back and tells the other village elders, wow, you know what happened? Let me tell you. So they start speculating. What's their destination going to be? We're so fortunate. Anyways, it's a very wonderful section of 10th Canto Bhagavatam. Nice, nice pastime. Very instructive. And pleasing. Because Varuna is a devotee, and he wishes to achieve Krishna's association. Krishna orchestrates a pastime where he can get, where Varuna can get Krishna's association. Krishna is very kind. Looked like a problem, but actually it was just a nice exchange, loving exchange. Please remember that the next time you have a problem. Any questions or comments? Oh, yes, okay.
We hear that going back to go back home, back to Godhead, serve Krishna there in our own small position. And I've also heard devotees speak how really often the Krishna's desire to go back home to the back Godhead, she just desires service.
Sure. I remember hearing the lecture where Srila Prabhupada spoke this, and then later I saw it, the transcription of the lecture in the Back to Godhead magazine. And like it was like, did I just imagine that I heard this lecture, that it was printed, where Prabhupada was saying that in the beginning, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastakam states, and the language it used was exactly correct, that ultimately the position that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will offer to us is Mama Janmani Janmani Shri Bhavatat Bhaktira Haitaki Twi. However, Prabhupada's point in the lecture was that for us in our present position, we should desire to go back to Godhead. We should desire to be in Krishna's association in the spiritual world. It's not only okay, it's good. And as our, this ultimately word, as our maturity in devotion becomes stronger, more developed, that particular dimension of our spiritual aspiration will naturally modify to the state where Krishna, you can do with me whatever you like. That's at a very elevated stage, which we're not. We can understand that's we're headed there, but we're not there. So being honest with our own situation, I wish to be with Krishna. And maybe our desire, even for that, is not so strong. Not sufficiently strong to get us out of the attractions that we have for material enjoyment. But so strengthening the desire to be with Krishna, serving Him in a loving mood. Ultimately, this other aspiration comes in a more purified state. I hope I've done justice to what Prabhupada said, but that's what I'm retaining, how he expressed it. Anything else? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, things like Ekadashi and Janmashtami, they come in the category of, they're not like Karma Kanda. If you make a mistake, you know, some deva gets upset at you and wants to like punish you. And so it seems like Nanmarad made some mistake in breaking up the Ekadashi or taking a bath at an appropriate time. Why is he getting Is it just Varuna's Leela to see Krishna, or is there something else?
Well, Varuna scolds his agent, his representative, who apprehended Nanda Maharaj. It's coming up in the purports, but there's two things. Technically, Nanda Maharaj was right, because it was one of those unique situations. So he hadn't broken the fast, but he was bathing, because at a time that's within those 6 hours, but before the sun rises. The day had passed. The Ekadasi, breaking of the Ekadasi, was in a shorter period of time. That time had elapsed, but still, the next day had not begun. So technically, he was right. So the agent of Varuna was wrong. But in addition, he's Krishna's father. He's not to be punished for anything. Certainly not a little technicality like that. So for both reasons, Varuna's agent was chastised. So why did it happen? It wasn't because he did something wrong. Why did it happen? As you said, Krishna's just making an arrangement for a number of things, but one of those number of things is Varuna was wanting his association, so he gave his association to Varuna. Towards the end of the 10th canto, Krishna makes up that there's a king. And a Brahmin, a Bahulashman Shrutadeva. And because they're so far away, they hadn't had Krishna's association, but he's like Krishna's devotee. So he made an arrangement to get his association. Krishna went to see him. But he did, orchestrate it in a different way. Or Muchukunda was a great devotee, but he hadn't seen Krishna. So Krishna made an arrangement so he could see him. And when he saw him, he didn't even recognize. He hadn't seen him. He heard about him. He was a devotee. But he didn't even recognize him. Then, gradually he recognized him. Krishna makes various arrangements for giving his association to his devotees. Prikranaya sadhana. Giving loving dealings with his devotees. That's why it happened. That's one of the reasons why it happened. There's multiple things.
Just a follow-up question, more on the aspect of Ekadashi. Personally, sometimes we're not able to start it at time, or we're not able to break it at the prescribed time. What's the gravity of the offense?
It's not so much an offense if you don't get the benefit of Ekadasi. It's a loss. If you don't break the Ekadasi on the proper time, you lose the benefit of observing the Ekadasi properly. That was the issue with Ambarish. He was performing that particular 1 year Ekadasi Vrata, not to get some punya points, but it was for his purification and benefit could be bestowed upon his citizens. The king does things like that for the benefit of his citizens, not just for the benefit of himself, because that's the nature of a king. So that benefit would not have been accrued had he not broken the Ekadasi at the proper time. It's not like you get spanked or get penalized if you don't break the Ekadasi at the proper time. You don't, the full benefit is not accrued, spiritual benefit. Because devotees have, that's their interest. Spiritual benefit. In the Karmakanda rituals, they also observe Ekadasi. They do all these different, for each Ekadasi, different things, and they get different benefits, and that one, next benefits, just year round, you get all kind of benefits. So they're disappointed if they don't get their material benefits. So it's like the rule is really, really critical.
Okay.
Yes.
But you know, to get the mocha, like, we have to chant and then, you know, hear, you know, we have to see and we have to engage our senses, right?
Good.
Like, what if the blind people are deaf and deaf, how they are going to get mocha? Because they cannot see, they cannot hear, they cannot talk.
If they can, even the auditory sense may not be active, spiritual sound vibration goes to the soul. Like, you know, these fortunate trees right outside the window here. You know, where's their ears? But the benefit is going, even as a tree, or a deaf person, etc., etc. Primarily by sound. You've heard this explanation before. Prabhupada explains that when somebody is asleep, the senses are inert, except one sense is to some degree awakened, or still awake, and that's hearing. And that's why someone is wakened by alarm. Or, you know, hey, get up, it's time to... Sound. So sound acts on all, wherever there's a spirit soul, that spiritual sound will act. Doesn't matter which sensory organs are not working. The sound is the principal one. Okay?
Prashad, give me 1 second.
Okay. I thought you were saying it's time for prashad.
I'm reading a book.
Yes.
I couldn't understand probably the point how Krishna is beyond dualities, and like if this place is like the place of dualities, if and but what about the spiritual world? Is free of dualities or?
Yes. But that's the second part of your question. The first part of your question is you don't understand, but I'm not sure where to go from with that question. Do I have to do it again? Do a rerun? Can you be a little more specific?
Like, how is not Krishna beyond dualities?
How is it? Well, it's just, that's just nature. He's beyond dualities. How are we to understand it? You can give a verbal explanation, or you can just chant good rounds and realize it that way. But the message is the message of Varuna, the message of this ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is everything is resting in Krishna in a way like the wind is resting in the sky. But the sky is not affected by the wind because it's more subtle. The wind can be very still, the wind can be very violent. The sky is more subtle, it's not influenced one way or the other. It's because it's more subtle, it's resting in. So similarly, the energies of Krishna are resting in him, but he's apart from it in the sense that he's the source of it, and it's happening not by his manipulating things. He's more subtle. He just wills, and so it is. The energies move according to his will. They're his servants. They receive the indication of Krishna's will, and they do Krishna's will. But he does nothing.
You were showing the photo, right? People, one is this God, is this God.
Yeah.
So here duality is like one is male, other is female. So how is Krishna to overrule that duality?
Where does that sense of male-female is a reflection of the spiritual reality, and the spiritual reality is the energy and the energetic. So to help you understand the energy, to help us understand the energy, energetic, Prabhupada gives the example of the sun and the sunlight. So, consider for a moment. Have you ever seen any sunlight without a sun? or the other way around, the sun without sunlight. So energy and energetic are inseparable. That's the oneness. But that there and now there's also a difference. The energy is not the energetic. Energetic is the source, and the energy comes from the energy, energetic. So in the spiritual world, there's a very nice verse in the very early part of Chaitanya Charitamrita where it's stating that the two forms of Radha and Krishna is actually one entity. Eternally manifest as two forms. But one should be, you know, we should be very clear on that authority, scriptural authority. One entity. But Krishna is manifesting his desire or potency to enjoy in a form of Radha. Radha Krishna is actually one entity. Ekatmanava bhibhuvi pura deha veda gatauta. One entity in two forms eternally. That's different than here. Here, I want to enjoy. So I need something outside of myself to enjoy. So I find something outside of myself, and there's the feature of duality. But in the case of Krishna, there's nothing outside of him. His desire to enjoy is manifest as Radha. He's enjoying his own internal potency. He's not enjoying something outside of himself. Jiva Goswami uses that argument in relation to describing the Rasa Lila. Again and again and again, he repeats it, like, you know, hammering it. That Krishna it's his own potency. He's enjoying with his own. When even a lawfully married person, husband, wife, Prabhupada, this is one of Ravindra's Rupa's story, but Prabhupada was saying to Ravindra's PhD professor, you're the debauchee, because you're enjoying Krishna's property. She's Krishna's property. You think she's yours. And you're trying to be the enjoyer of Krishna's property. You're the debauchee. Right? Because he was saying the opposite about Krishna. Prabhupada didn't take it very kindly. So here is duality and there is absolute. Although there's diversity or plurality in the spiritual realm, it's absolute. Advayam tattva. Here, now you're using, you know, there's male, female, that's duality. Yin and yang, literally, male and female, opposites. In the spiritual realm, it's absolute. Krishna and Krishna's pleasure potency are inseparable. Then, you know, just like, really spin your mind, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is where those two forms become one. In the position of the personality of Godhead, but in the luster and the mood, the bhava of Radha, in one form. So when he shows his feature to Ramananda Roy, he shows Radha Shyamasundar, Radha Krishna, and his form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ramananda Roy faints. That's who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. Digest that.
I have one more question.
Got one more question.
So, in spiritual, Krishna is absolute, right? So what about the other living entities who are in spiritual world? They come under duality or they don't come under duality?
Second one.
No. But they are not absolute.
Why do you say that? Everything in the spiritual world is of the same absolute nature. Advayam. It's the non-dual realm. They don't become absolute in the sense that they are the source of everything, the absolute truth, but they are of the same absolute nature, where there's no touch of matter. It's all of a non-dual substance, Satchidananda Vigraha, in that sense, absolute. When you get there, it's really nice. No more duality. Yay! Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Is all in this room, Prabhupada ki
jai.